You are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello, it's Grant, and I'm really excited for my guest today, and I'm really excited that we could actually work this out between continents.
Uh-huh.
I have the creative force behind original graphic novel Howling. I have Lucy Sullivan from across the pond. Lucy, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well. I wish I had called it howling, though. It's actually barking, but it's very similar. No, don't worry. It's kind of the same thing, and it's British slang, so I don't know how well it translates, because you get called barking mad, but it's also howling at the moon, so it could have been either one. So, you know.
I just
maybe that's the next one. Yeah. Howling. The time when I just hit to the streets at night and howled at the moon.
I mean,
there was a period.
Exactly. And also, I just gotta say, I love the art that you did in Barking. With it's just
thank you.
Where the was it the black dog or the wolf or the
it's sort of a bit of everything, I think.
Yeah.
Just I didn't want it to be tangible, so it's just this kind of scratchy, kind of dog wolf thing.
It's perfect. I love the way you rendered that, where it's like almost amorphous. Just you get this feeling of static anxiety with it. So I thought that was
thank
really
you.
Cool.
Oh, thank you. It's made up of loads of like scratches and smudges, about like 50 layers. So every time it's completely different. It was this mad exercise in Photoshop layering. Probably a bit too mad, you know, considering the context of the book. But, you know, it was very satisfying to make.
And how did you get to Barking from your childhood? Whereabouts did you grow up?
Oh, so I'm from London. Grew up sort of around London also. So my parents ran pubs and we were in, so I grew up in like a live music pub in West London in the 70s. So we had like some quite big bands. We had The Clash play and Pink Floyd and people you won't know, Chaz and Dave, who are like big time in London.
My favorite!
Your fave, and that was amazing. That was in a place called Fulham, which is sort of at that point it was a really bohemian kind of area and a big area for kind of Irish and Caribbean immigrancy. So my family was one of many Irish families that come there, but my dad met my mum. He was actually what's called a £10 pom, so he paid £10 to go to Australia and live there, and he met my mum there, and she's from New Zealand. So I'm this really kind of random mix of Kiwi Irish. So I can really drink, and that's not always a good thing, you know. And I just try and feed everyone if they come near me. It's like, have some food, have some alcohol. Where are you going? I know it's 10 in the morning, you know. But so we grew up mainly in Fulham and in Shepherd's Bush, which is West London down the road. And then my dad got in quite a big row with the breweries because it was the 80s and it was moving away from like live music pubs and into kind of wine bars and stuff.
Oh, really?
And he was not a fan. So he actually threw a chair at his boss. So that was that. They were still with the brewery because they're contracted, but we got sent to all like the worst pubs in London. And we moved to a flat in a really awful part called Croydon, which, sorry to Croydon people, but it's like there's this idea that it should be a city in itself because it's a massive area. But it's so awful. It should just be walled, I think, and just like a flyover goes over the top. I'd like to just wave past it whenever I go. I don't want to ever go there.
How much time did you spend in Croydon?
Oh, like 9 years or something, I think. It's just like, it was just one of my mum and I call them the dark years. try not to refer to it too much, but. Yeah, so it was like, but at that point we had another pub that my dad went in with a friend. They bought a pub in North London, King's Cross, which is like a really, really grotty area at that point, but it's really nice now. It's where like Google have offices now and things like that. But then it was like prostitutes and runaways and junkies and stuff. And we had this like Aussie Kiwi pub. So all Aussies and Australians and New Zealanders getting absolutely shit-faced at the weekend. So it was infamous, to say the least. So fun upbringing.
I was going to say, that sounds incredible to be like a voyeur on all this stuff happening.
Yeah, no, often too young, you know, because I'd be sent away, like up to the flat and be like, yeah, off you go now. The grown-ups are getting drunk. And you're like, you know, and my childhood was like just me and loads of other kids and no adults. And we had like a German Shepherd dog that was like in charge. Honestly, it's like something out of the Beano. And we would just run riot in the flat and the parents would just be downstairs drinking and God knows what else and having parties. And I just, you know, my mum was about, but I don't remember many adults being around until we moved to Croydon. And then there was always an adult around, you know, but when we had a pub, not a lot of adults.
That sounds, just from a casual observer and listener, that sounds super fun.
Yeah, it was. It was awesome. And we did terrible things. I hope my daughter, she'll be a lot older when she finds out. I'll wait till she's like 30 and then I'll tell her. Because if I tell her now, she'll just do them all. You know?
Oh my God.
Yeah. No climbing roofs and throwing eggs at people. That's not allowed.
That's not allowed, but it is kind of fun.
It was amazing. We had this like really busy high street in front of the pub and a bus stop like right underneath. And it's a huge pub and we'd climb up, we had like flat roofs and we could climb up the pub, go behind our big kind of concrete lion and just lob eggs down at the bus stop. But we left there when I was 7. So I just think now I just go, oh my God. I mean, we must have been, I don't know, like 60 foot or something. I mean, it's a big pub. Right. And there was a whole flat above it and then we were above that. So God knows how no one died. It's astonishing. I think I really thought I was. My sister was quite nervous, but I wasn't. And I mean, I was always breaking stuff, but I was still invincible, even with a full leg cast. It's like, can't keep me down. And my daughter's definitely got that. I mean, she's got this like bruise up her leg at the moment. She fell off a wall and it's just like every time she goes into school I think, oh God, they're gonna call like social services on me again. You know, honestly, she fell on the wall, there were witnesses. And I was saying, don't go on the wall. You know? Yeah, it was a cool upbringing, but definitely not one you could do now, I don't think.
Oh yeah, I don't think half the stuff that happened from the late 70s to the mid 80s can be perpetrated now.
No, those days are gone, sadly. You know, they were great, but they were also quite wrong in a lot of ways. So they probably should go.
And what about during your childhood, did you display any artistic proclivities?
I did love drawing. Yeah, I used to be one of those kids that drew all over the wall and the bunk beds. And actually, luckily, my partner and I both quite relaxed about it because he's creative as well. He's an animator and he teaches animation.
Oh, wow.
So we can't not allow. So, I mean, you can barely see it, but the walls behind me, there was like one, I'm in my kitchen, and there was like one wall that was just this giant chalk ghost for about 2 years that my daughter drew. And the only time we took it down was after we realised we had the teachers round for a meeting for the first time. We'd forgotten to take it down. Came round and they're like, okay.
So don't Frankie's, worry, our house is fine.
Frankie's family's fine. Interesting. Like, oh shit, you know. But she draws on everything and we just think, oh well, you know, we haven't painted for 10 years, so it just adds to the character. But yeah, from a young age, I always drew, but I never ever thought it would be a job. That was just beyond something I could, I think, because I just presume I would work in a pub, you know, and I did. I did right into my late 20s. I was working behind a bar, so well, nearly early 30s, actually. So yeah, I just thought that would be my life, you know, running pubs and working in restaurants and stuff like that.
How frequently did you keep up with your art during that time period?
It was hobby, you know. It would be something I would do on days off, and I would, you know, I'd take nights off work and just sit at home and draw comics, actually, which really? I never showed anyone. I was trying to practice just my art, just keep it up by drawing my favorite book at the time, which was this Michael Marshall Smith book called Only Forward. I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's the craziest sci-fi, and it's really good, and it would make an amazing comic. I'm not the artist to do that because I'm not good enough. It's really complicated. But it was quite fun to just try and figure out what characters could look like and stuff like that. But I've seen those images lately, and they're just so shit. Like, wow. And everyone thought they were great. And I'm like, no, they were really, really bad.
But now, is this you just looking back on your work and saying, oh,
no, they're really shit. I left college. I sort of did okay at school, tried to go to art school and just didn't have the focus. So I went traveling with a friend and I was going to be a snowboarder. So I was just like, the usual.
The usual.
Went round France, found French boys. That went badly. Came back, went to New Zealand, found New Zealand boys. That went badly. There's a theme here. But I had a great time in New Zealand, actually, and worked bars and snowboarded and rock climbed and stuff. But when I was there, my dad died, and that's sort of part of what Barking's about, because I came back, I had this like huge breakdown, and then went back to art school. And from that, I did a degree in illustration and animation, and it really changed the way I drew. And it was very drawing based, like very technically based, and it just elevated my work massively. So It is genuinely painful to look back at the stuff I did before that and go, oh God, I couldn't draw hands properly or anything. You know, it's kind of mortifying.
It's amazing to hear whenever I talk to an artist who did art and then worked in animation. It's like it's almost a leveling up.
Yeah.
Within their understanding of technique and form and like kinetic action and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Especially I did hand-drawn animation, and the uni I went to, I was lucky they did a thing called location drawing, where you go out just out and about. So you go to the galleries around London, and we went to like cities in Spain and New York. Wow. And you just draw what you see. You draw the theatres, the people, the cars and everything. And you have to draw it on site, there and then, like not from photos.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, it's quite something. And it's something I still practice. And so you learn this technique of blind drawing, where you're looking at the subject and not at the paper. And it produces a really amazing kind of unique line and gives you that kind of observational skill. But for animating, it really teaches you how people stand and those kind of weird angles people have, like, you know, you draw in a gallery and everyone stands in a really similar way, like hands behind their back or folded arms, leaning back, and you start picking up poses. And I think that helps a lot with comics as well, because you're always looking for that key pose of how to get something across in just one moment through the pose, or, you know, and how that can translate into the next one to bring it some drama, you know.
And what about did comics enter your life?
I read them from a very young age. So we had, obviously at the pub, we had live-in staff, and they had their books and videos and things. So I had access. I was reading Viz, which is quite a rude British comic with there's two female characters called Fat Slags, and a slag is like a loose woman. I was reading that from a very young age. And I think there's one like Billy something, who basically has these enormous testicles that he has to push around.
As one does.
You know, push around in a wheelbarrow. And this is stuff I was reading at 5, you know, which probably shouldn't be. But I found Asterix and Calvin and Hobbes and watched loads of cartoons. So I think for me, it was always comics and cartoons. You know, it was always a mixture together. And I never really stopped. I don't think there was ever a point where I wasn't reading some kind of comics. It just went through different stages. You know, I had sort of 2000 AD and deadline stages for like UK comics, and then found manga in the early days when they had here we were getting it through Viz, actually, who were bringing it over. And it was all kind of like Appleseed and Akira and, you know, some really amazing stuff when you look back on it. But it's a really dodgy anime. I mean, it's just some really graphic anime.
Or hentai?
Well, you know, there's that one demon something or other that's just this like monster demon with an enormous penis, and it does all these things, and we're just, you know,
as one does,
stoned watching it going, what is this? do I like it? I don't know. Do I like it? Is it weird?
You know, you turn to the person next to you and say, is this
okay? I don't know, you know. But I mean, I saw Akira at the cinema and it just was astonishing. Not the first time it came out, but they had reruns. There's a really great cinema here in London, so if you ever come, there's a place called the Prince Charles, and they do brilliant sort of lineup of reruns, and they do like Rocky Horror Picture Show, and they have like a full cast thing sometimes, and it's a really just a great night. But they do like Akira seasons and things like that, so we got to see Akira, and that was in the 90s, so it wasn't like it was old or anything. It just blew my mind, you know, and just that was, I think, one of the points where I was like, oh, I wish I could do that, you know, but it never occurred to me you could go to uni and study it, you know, but that came later at least. So
like, when did you have that revelation where you're like, oh, I can make art my career?
Not until, so after I had that breakdown, I went and got therapy. So I was 23 when my dad died, and it took like nearly 2 years to realize that I'd been in really full-on depression, and got some help. And a friend of mine at the time, in fact an old friend who I was having quite a lot of problems with, and she was she's actually the dead friend in Barking.
Oh.
she's still alive. We kind of fell out for years, and we've sort of become friends again, and it's really awkward because I don't know if she's ever read the book, and I doubt she'll realize it's her, but if she does, it's gonna be a really hard conversation. But anyway, cross that bridge when it falls down in my face, you know. But she'd gone back to uni, and she was doing she was doing fine art, and I was just kind of really like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And I was still drawing, and the therapist he was kind of useless. He was just sort of obsessed with our pub and wanted to ask questions. I know. So no one can see, but Grant's giving me this, what?
Let's talk about your past. More specifically, let's talk about...
Let's talk about the pub. Yeah, well, it's because this Aussie Kiwi pub, we'd put sawdust down on the floor, and it was to soak up like all the vomit and booze and cigarette butts. But he just got it in his head that it was some sort of like cowboy bar where like shots are being like flung across, and everyone's like, look, and it's like, no, mate, it's like hammered 20 somethings puking green vomit everywhere. This is not classy or a Western. It's like, it's proper boozy chaos.
A real therapist, not like some guy who like proper. Broke into the
I know. I had moments where I was like, because I did it privately, and it cost me, I was paying for it out of my wages, and it cost me a lot of money. It was like 150 quid a session. It was like just huge amounts of money. But yeah, he was the real deal. But I just think they're a bit shit. You know, I haven't ever, you know, I got the most out of it by doing a workbook, like a cognitive behavioral therapy book, and going back to art, you know. So it was when I went back to art school and I redid my, what would be a kind of, we call it a foundation year here. So it's like, before you go to art school, you do a year or two of trying out every type of art to just see where your strength lies. And it's an amazing thing to do because you get to do pottery and photography and filmmaking and jewellery and all sorts. And I got kind of really lucky. I had a tutor who although his specialism was graphic design, he spoke to me a lot about my interest in animation, and he started setting me projects personally that were more leaning towards that. So he set me like a storyboard project or something like that, so I'd have to start exercising that kind of interest. And he pushed me to go to the uni I went to. So it's called Kingston School of Art, and it's one of the top in the country for illustration and animation. And he pushed me to it, and then his colleague was like, yeah, but you won't get in. And I'm like, oh, thanks for the support. I know, he really was a dick as well. And I did get in, so I was like, yeah, in your face, Richard.
His name was Richard?
Yeah, he exactly. He's an actual dick. Although always Richard, never Dick, just from the student's perspective. Yeah, but it was a, you know, even getting in there, I thought I'd still be working in bars and stuff, but somehow I managed to kind of eke a career out of it. it's not a well-paid career, but it's, you know, I'm eking it out somehow, and I have been now for about, oh god, 15 years? No, god, I'll be getting closer to 20 soon. But from animation, and then I moved into comics sort of 2017 after I had my daughter, right. And you know, that 2 years of your life just sort of slips through your fingers because you have a baby.
Absolutely. True.
Yeah, so, but I still don't know if I feel confident that I have a career in it. Does that make sense? You're still like, am I making this work? I don't know, maybe I need to just go and work in a pub again, or
well,
become a gardener.
if some dipshit in the States knows your book, I think that that's a pretty good
thank you,
pretty good indication that you're doing okay.
Yeah, that's a good point, thank you, appreciate it.
Oh no, I'm glad to be that dipshit, don't worry about it.
Thank you to all my dipshits.
And earlier when we were talking about the actual barking monster, you alluded to it was primarily Photoshop. You're working digital?
No, it was all physical.
Oh my gosh.
So it's all drawn with biro and carbon paper. Have I got some with me? I've got some here. Not that anyone can see, but it's like carbon typewriter sheets. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
People might be too young. I mean, you can hear it. There you go. Just a little technical bit for you. But they're like really thin bits of like pieces of paper with carbon on one side, and you put it down so your board is black essentially, right. And then I use dip pens and sharpened sticks, and like the dog is like my fingernail literally like scratching.
Really?
Yeah, the carbon, and I'll ball it up and just like rub it on. It's a really physical way to work and really pleasing, and it sort of means that you can't be, I wanted it to be a really loosely drawn book. I didn't want it to be uptight or anything, because mm-hmm. it was drawing straight in. So a lot of the drawings are totally unmanipulated in films of what they look like. They were drawn straight off the bat, like with the biro, but I'd have to draw it maybe like 4 or 5 times to get the one I wanted. So it was mm-hmm. a really uneconomical way to make a comic. But
absolutely fascinating though.
It was so weird a way to do it, but I don't know, it just sort of, it just made sense at the time because it was so personal, because it's based on kind of the breakdown I had and how I felt, and I was getting depression again, which is why I did it. So I wanted to be honest. I just wanted to just draw it and let it kind of come out, but I had this kind of loose structure in the script. But it, yeah, I mean, I'd never make anything like that again. It was just too long-winded, too unstructured. But a really great thing to get to do once, you know, at least.
Are you still working traditional mostly?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. So actually, I ended up going, because I use Photoshop to lay it out. So what I wasn't any good at was coming up with, I can't draw into grids or boxes. Like, I'm a really messy artist anyway. So the idea of like getting it right first time is just terrifying to me. And the whole grid system I admire, but it gives me the heebie-jeebies big time. So what I tend to do is for barking, I would just sketch on kind of big sheets, scan it, and then lay it out in Photoshop on the page. So, and then I'd put my, when I did put panels in, I'd put them in after. So I know, totally cheating. But the panels themselves are just like, they're hand-drawn lines. And I just have this like bank of them. And I'd choose which line I thought worked with which sketch. So each spread is individually designed. So no two spreads are the same. And I still sort of do that, which I kind of really enjoy, that sort of last bit of slotting them in and kind of mixing the lines and letting the artwork kind of cut between it and stuff. And that's quite pleasing. But otherwise, it's still hand-drawn. And I'd gone really Photoshop heavy on a couple of projects. Like a most recent one for Jeff Lemire that I just did, I went way too complex on the artwork. Because, you know, I'm trying to, like, impress Jeff.
Oh, well.
As you would, right? And it's a really, everything's done. I wrote it as well. He asked me to write it and draw it.
Oh, no
and
pressure.
I realized, yeah, you're right. You know, I wrote a really complicated script. And only when I wrote it and went, sat down to draw it, I went, oh, fuck, what, how am I going to draw this? It was just like, Jesus Christ. But I went really Photoshop heavy, so too many layers. It was all hand-drawn stuff. It's some digital colour, but it's just the volume of layering to get the kind of effects I wanted. Stupid. So my next one, I'm just doing carbon and watercolour. Like,
or at least that's what you're telling yourself just, now.
That's what I'm saying to myself, and I'm holding on to it. But I'll end up doing something because there's some fantastical elements to it, so I'm bound to like want to bring in something. But we'll see. Hopefully not too many.
Would you ever try just doing strictly digital?
I did it for a comic indexed, which I did with a friend of mine, Fraser Campbell. So yeah. Fraser wrote it, and he approached, well, in fact he put a call out on Twitter because the artist who was gonna do it with Anna Redman, she was finishing her degree and she just couldn't do it. She's amazing. Like, watch out for her. I think she's doing stuff for 2000 AD now. Oh, her right stuff is just awesome, you know. But she was like flat out on her degree, and Fraser put a call out saying, you know, who fancies like coming on board? And I was like, oh, I'd do it. And we were sort of mates and stuff. And he was like, great, let's go for it. And I just finished Barking. So I'd done with like black and white stuff and hand drawn, and I had an iPad and Procreate, and I'd been messing about on it. And I'd done this kind of oil painting course where you learn how to paint color spots. It sounds really random, but a shadow into a kind of shadowy thing. Uh-huh. They're often color wise, it's like it's not black, it's like a deeper red. Or so it was this amazing course where you learn about looking really at the color and how there's like they kind of bleed, things bleed into each other. They right. don't, there's not actually these sharp lines and stuff. I thought that'd be a really amazing way to color a comic. Naturally found like the oil brush on Procreate and the kind of charcoals and stuff, and I was like, oh, this could work. Did a sketch of one of the characters in it, sent it to Fraser, and I was like, what do you reckon? And I did this like, you know, 20 minutes before picking up my kid, just fucking about drawing. Yeah. Sent it to him and he tweets it.
Oh,
gets this, like, really great response. And then we get named in a British comic article as like the things we're most looking forward to next year, and it's like indexed and they use the picture, and I was like, oh shit. So
well, now
I guess I'm drawing it on Procreate. And I thought, oh, it will be quicker maybe, you know, because I'm going straight in and all of this stuff. But in the end, I think it took me 3 times as long, and it's the editing side of it. Like with when you're drawing by hand, you know, like one of the reasons I use carbon is if I make a mistake, I make a mistake, it's in there. And I just kind of try not to fuck about with it and just let it be what it is. I'm not a super tight, clean artist, so just embrace that. But Procreate, you can like zoom in to the exact pixel, you know, and it was just like, oh, and I just got way too fussy. And
that's what everyone says.
Yeah.
When the option to get so anal retentive
on yeah.
any details is there, all the artists are like, well, I have to noodle just a little bit more.
Oh, you know, and you realize the worst is because I didn't have a huge amount of dialogue in Barking. So, and I lettered it myself, but Fraser's, you know, much more sort of verbose dialogue, yeah. You know, and there's a lot to get across, quite high concept sci-fi. And I tried to letter it and I was like, I'm out of my depth. I just, you know, don't really know how to do this. And so we got Hassan Otsman Elhel, who's, you know, like one of the top letterers. Yeah, well, he's a good friend of Fraser's. And he's like, yeah. And he did such a good job. I mean, people think I lettered it. And he's so sympathetic to my artwork that people just presumed I'd done it. And you're like, his name's on the cover. He's fully credited. But he's quite pleased about that because Hassan's like, well, you know, if they, that's kind of what you want, that you don't want people to feel like they're separate things, right. You know.
Yeah.
So, but I'm always at pains to say Hassan lettered it and he did an amazing job at it. But also it's when you've spent that long noodling on your artwork, putting some massive like speech over the top of it. It's like he had to place it where he had to place it. And I was just like, you know, I spent, you know, 2 weeks drawing those faces. Now they've just got like massive speech bubble across them. But for the good of the comic, it needed to be there. It didn't matter what those faces looked like, you know. And it's that stuff where you go, shit, yeah. And he did the right, he did the right call, you know. Mm. But it's so hard to make that call when you spent too long. Whereas if I've drawn it quickly, I'm less fussy about that sort of thing as well. So, you know, trying to never do Procreate again. Maybe for the occasional, like there's some really cool effects you can use. I like the kind of light pens and stuff you can get there. So at the most, I might drop something in, add some effects, and then just export it and get the fuck out before I start oil painting.
Now you're just going to approach the void. You're not going to go into the void again.
Yeah, I'm going to have a little peek, and then it stares back, and I just run the other way.
Now, Lucy, I have a question for you. Let's say that you're minding your business, you're just walking along the park, and all of a sudden, this monstrous goose just starts descending down. And everyone else around you is scattering, but you stand still. And it plops down and it looks at you. And while it's making eye contact with you, it relays a message that says, I trust you enough to do the right thing.
No, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. And instead of an egg, it kind of like goops out this silly putty looking humanoid thing.
Okay.
And what you have to do is you can only choose one meal to serve this thing for the rest of its life.
Wow.
And this is once it touches this meal, this is like it keys to it. Its body only accepts this. What are you going to feed this creepy looking jello person?
I mean, it sounds a lot like parenthood. My kid eats like about two or three things anyway. She was pretty jelly at the start. You know? They're kind of goofy. So I'm not going to say pesto because, you know, I cook that all the time.
What stuff has been thrown at me as a parent?
Oh, God. Yeah, everything. Oh, God, what would it be? It would have to be something that, like, you know, I don't have a lot of time when we're cooking. It's one meal for everyone. I'm not engaging in that silliness of one meal for the child and two for the adults and one for the strange, goopy human. So they're eating what we're eating, you know.
This is the same thing it's going to have every time. So right. When it's out of the house, it's going to try and find places that makes this as well.
Oh, now that gets hard, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's going to have to be something really simple.
Well, you want this Gumby motherfucker to be as moderately happy as possible.
Yeah. Back to those high parenting aims we discussed. Moderately happy, mildly contented. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards, but it's not something they can get anywhere. It's like a kind of really what we eat all the time. It's like this kind of spaghetti with fresh tomatoes and we eat loads of raw garlic. I grow tomatoes and garlic, so they'd at least be able to get that, you know, if the slugs haven't got it or the foxes haven't pissed all over it.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, we got the most mangy fox in the world in our garden. It's got like half a tail. It just stares at you in the morning like, what are you doing here?
Don't you know it's time to eat?
I've just had a massive poo on your windowsill. Thanks, man.
This guy,
so maybe it's fox, right? That's what we have to get it to eat. It's the fox. I don't know. I'd sort of be tempted to go with that because then at least I could happily live on it. But there's not many places they're going to get that. I mean, I'm in South East London, which is, you know, it's still quite gritty in places. You know, it has character. And if you're going to get a meal in South East London, it's basically chicken and chips. So it will be it's the chicken shop. And you'll get it all over South East London. You've got to go to Morley's, get yourself fried chicken and chips, and there you go. It's going to be hard for the gloopy human because it's going to remind them of the goose that birthed it in my hands or on my head or whatever it was.
That could be a good thing or a bad thing.
It's going to help with that, you know, separation anxiety. This is like, well, you ate mummy, so now you got me. You've got Morley's. You've got Morley's. And I reckon, you know, if we could teach it how to do, like, my daughter practices these, like, cute give me anything faces, which she's like, can you say no to it? And I'm like, yeah, no.
What's
the best? No. I know. It's like you get more pleasure from saying no when they're giving you the big cow eyes and stuff. So maybe she can teach it how to do the cow eyes. We're going to have to name it. She'll probably call it something like Gloopy.
Gloopy?
Or Ella. Everything's called Ella in our house, you know. So, although she's got a bit better, actually. Her last thing is called Nika, which I thought was like, Nika.
She's like,
yeah, Nika. She's got this weird blue fox thing she's calling Nika. Yeah, she's expanding from Ella into these made-up names.
Well, I like the way you're deferring the name to your daughter. You're like, I don't want to.
She could do it. She could name it. We're getting a dog this year, so we're like on a list for a puppy, and we've been talking about dog names for about 5 years. I swear to God, and she's always like food-based. It's like ketchup, sausage, chips, Marmite, and I'm like, you got to picture yourself at the park shouting this. I don't want to be stressed at 9 a.m. going, ketchup!
Oh, God.
It's like, I have enough problems on the school run with the parents thinking I'm a weirdo. I just don't need to be shouting food groups around the park, you know. And I was like, I tell you what, I would go for something like enoki, like the mushrooms, right? I'd be happy with that because it's like obscure enough, but it also sounds like a name, and it fits into our pompous, arty ways. So it's perfect. And then she spells it, oh no, key. So she's like, oh no, key.
All right.
And you're like, okay, she's good at naming. So, and we looked it up, and in Japanese, you can essentially make it into, translates into your machine. So we looked up
You gotta call this gloop thing, you know? Onoki.
Onoki, and it can be your eating machine. I've got to find out what the Japanese is for your gloopy machine. I mean, the dog will have to get a new name, but, you know, Onoki 2.
That would be so funny. And they'll say,
Onoki 2.
Where's Onoki 1? You'd be like, we don't talk about
it. I think Onoki 2 ate Onoki 1 with the chicken and chips as a side.
that's a really solid decision because
thanks.
Anywhere in the world they can get like at worst like a McDonald's McChicken and fries, and they'll be like,
do you know? And if they sort of beg outside with the cute face they learned from my daughter, it's a winner, right? It's only me that's going to say no. Everyone else will be like, sure, little fella, have some chicken and chips.
You know, gloopy Onoki.
Yeah. No, don't touch me.
No hugs.
No hugs for you.
We are at the part of this program where I'm going to ask you 5 questions.
Cool.
These are 5 questions we ask every guest. They're based off the James Lipton's Inside the Actor's Studio. Which apparently, humorous guy to watch, but a real jerk off in real life.
Not at all surprised. Not at all.
So number one, and I love this because you do the art and you do the writing. What is your favorite sequential art sound effect?
Oh, What did I find recently that I was really into? So I've got some quite gruesome scenes coming up in my next one. And I'm in the writing stage, and it was like a crack. It's like, how do I do a crack? And I just like making them up, and it kind of sploosh, swap. You know, like, how am I going to do that? It's like a...
Like, well, now I'm curious, what are all these scenarios? Like, is something getting torn asunder?
There's some tearing, there's some dropping of squelchy things. There's some, yeah, it gets quite gory at parts. So, you know, and I had a lot of fun with Jeff's, with the black hammer. There's some thwomps and thwacks and stuff. I think I most like just making them up and just like dancing around with, especially if there's a weapon involved, you know. Ooh. And so the only thing I can't say much about the black hammer, but there is a rolling pin employed as a weapon at one point. And trying to figure out, like, I'm like dancing around my studio with a rolling pin, being like, is it a foof or a thump or a whoosh? You know, what would that make?
Hit that fox. If you could hit the fox with the pin.
I know. I kind of like the Mankey Fox, you know. He's very London.
He's
probably
three.
A woman. Anoki 3. The Mankey one. I think we'll stick with Mankey.
I like it. Number two, what is something that you love about sequential art?
I think it's, I mean, there's so many things, but I think I love that you can get that motion even though it's static. You know, it has so much movement to it. And you think how much of comics is kind of action-based or physically-based movements, and yet it's this entirely still thing. You know, it is, you know, like animation in freeze frame. And I think it's extraordinary for that you can get across this entire feeling of a journey or someone fighting or anything like that in just such simple panels. And especially when you know, look at Japanese work and that use of and like lines and signifiers of motion. And I just think it's such a beautiful language to get across something static. You know, it's so inventive, and there's always like someone doing something, you're like, ah, that's such a clever solution. And it's always evolving, you know. No one just sticks to like one way of doing it. Someone always comes up with a new way of kind of getting something across, even though it's static. And yeah, I think it's amazing for that.
Now, what is something about sequential art that you dislike?
I mean, it's the answer everybody has, but it's so hard to make. It's so badly paid for the level of work. And I wish I could make a living that I could actually live on, because it's, you know, I love doing it. It sort of took me forever to finally find the thing that I think I not only love, but I'm okay at. And it's so hard to make a living, and it ends up making you feel so depressed, because you're like, I've spent 3 months on that and I'm getting like 500 fucking quid. You know? It's just impossible to do. And especially because I think it's this disparity in the pay as well, because I've had a couple of professional jobs now that have added an entire digit to my page rate. Yeah. And you're just like, that's wrong. It shouldn't be that if I'm doing something indie, it's a digit less than doing something professional, where there's less stress, there's less people on your case. And, you know, it was the especially one I did recently, I'd done a pin-up, and I can't say what it is yet, but it's a big title. And my first one I did was for 100 quid, and I got $1,000 US for this one. And you're just like, how does that, that's just wrong. There shouldn't be that utter disparity between what you get paid, because I probably worked as hard, if not harder, on the first one, because I was trying to prove myself, you know. Yeah. And I think that's it. It's the level of work for how terribly it's paid in the art side of it. I think the writing's less bad, to be honest. And, you know, I might be a shit writer, but I quite enjoy the writing, and I find it like not massively stressful. But also, only I have to deal with how complex a panel I've written or whatever. Right. I'm not putting that on anyone. Whereas I think it's probably a lot more stressful if you're like, how am I going to get this person to want to draw my field of horses being chased by bicycles?
That's a couple cruel. Of T-Rexes. You
know? Yeah, I quite like drawing bikes, to be honest, but everyone really? Else seems to. Yeah, don't mind a horse or a bike. I'm more like, don't make me draw a straight building. Don't make me draw modern art. And I'm definitely not drawing like anyone with massive tits because they just... they don't work like that. So, you know, I've done too much life drawing. I know what real boobs are like, and that's yeah. how they work.
Don't tell that to a large portion of
I know those guys are gonna hate my black camera, and I am well prepared for it.
Good.
Yeah, well, I know Jeff doesn't entertain any of those wankers either, so you're like, you're on safe ground.
Yeah, well, for number five, I like this one because I feel like everyone's got at least one. And it's, what's your favorite curse word that's not actually a curse word?
Oh, I'm part Irish. So all you do is just replace a letter. So you can say feck because it's not fuck. So you can say, yeah. For feck's sake, and no one can tell you off, right? One that I think it is a curse word in Ireland, but most British people don't know it, and a lot of people don't know it unless they know anyone Irish, is bint. And yeah. It's kind of a really rude thing to call an old woman, like, you old bint is a bit like, oh, the sort of C word in Ireland. But no one knows it here, so you can just use it liberally. My dad did all the time. He's like, look at that old bint. Like, you know, and so it was that way of being able to swear and no one can tell you off, because even like the priest isn't going to tell you off for saying feck, you know, so
right.
you might raise an eyebrow, but it's not like you've said the actual word. So I think, yeah, the Irish are the way to go with this. Just find someone Irish to, listen to what they say. What was the other one? Oh, I tell you what, we're reading this book, my daughter and I, it's called The Midnight Hour, and it's got a family in it who the mum is this mad Irish artist. My daughter's like, oh look, this is familiar. And her mum is a pooka, which is like a malevolent animal spirit who kind of tricks us at people. So the dog in Barking is a pooka, like he's referred to as being a pooka, and it's this kind of tricksy, malevolent kind of Irish spirit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she goes there and she gets in a massive fight with people, and she keeps calling them a wagon. Like, yeah, wagon. Yeah, wagon. And it's like, you know, I think that's an amazing thing to like slag someone off with. Look at you, yeah, wagon.
Oh, well, in stateside, some people like to use the phrase jack wagon.
Jack wagon. Wow. What is that? What is a jack wagon?
It's kind of same thing. You just, it's like, you hunk of dumb shit. You're a jack. Yeah, yeah. What are you doing, you jack wagon?
Jack wagon. Oh, I'm going to tell my daughter that. She's going to love it. I've got some moth flying in my eye. It's a classy house. You know.
So, Lizzie, I got some bad news for you.
Oh.
The goose.
Is it the gloopy guy?
Well, that's the thing. The gloopy guy was so thrilled that it wrote back to the goose that you decided that it was going to eat chicken and chips. But the goose is upset because that doesn't sound healthy for its little gloopy boy. So it comes back and it eats you. And now you've been digested and you're dead. And I'm sorry.
That's okay. I've had a good run.
However, you go to what we perceive to be heaven. And while you're, you know, putzing around, you see this guy over in the corner, and he's wearing a wife beater. He's smoking a cigar. Looks really gruff. He's going crazy on a drafting table, and it's Jacob Kurtzberg, a.k.a. Jack Kirby, one of the godfathers of comic books. What do you hope that he says to you?
I hope he says, Luce, mate, 9-panel grids are the fucking devil. Don't worry about it. What kind of mental person made everyone do that? You did. And you got all these people so excited about it, they can't step the fuck away. You know, so, you know, me and Jack are going to have like a real genuine heart to heart. And I reckon he's going to be like, I'm sorry to all the artists because I was really good at it. And it just, I wish I could have broken out. But, you know, we all hang on that crux of the thing that people love. And it's really hard to like experiment. And I'll forgive him. And I'll pass him some carbon paper and go, hey, go nuts.
Like, I've been looking for this stuff up yeah. here.
Get scratching. You can lend me your crazy drawing board with all the implements and rulers. I mean, especially because even with like a ruler and one of those kind of, you know, spirit level things, I still can't get a straight line. I think I'm physically incapable. I just can't do it. There's just something like wonky about my brain. It's just like, so I admire it as a skill base. And of course, you know, you can't not admire Kirby, but yeah, I mean, it's some kind of madness that goes down that kind of path as well. So, you know, I hope he's getting to relax a bit and is stepping away from the drawing board, to be fair.
We can both agree there's no way he's stepping away from the drawing board.
No, he probably will still be drawing, right?
Well, this was a ton of fun. Where can folks find you on the socials?
So I'm on most things as Lucy Sullivan UK. I just started Patreon. I'm on there as Lucy Sullivan. And yeah, come say hi. My website's lucysullivanuk.com. So sorry for the UK thing. I'm anti-Brexit. Some woman wrote a book using my name, so it's completely registered everywhere. So it's really hard to get handles and stuff in my name.
That's so obnoxious. I'm sorry.
I know. Marianne Keys. Bloody woman. She seems really nice.
You know? Well, Lucy, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter @grantandstuff.